Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Season 3 of the Fanfiction Tapes. I'm your host today, Maya. Pronouns she, her, and today I'm joined by...
Dylan, the he, him guy. Hello.
Riley, my pronouns are they, them.
And I am our producer, Ian. Pronouns he, him.
Today's episode is a story spotlight on Nimona, the... Well, I was going to say the recent Netflix hit, but... It was recent when we scheduled the episode. It's been a minute now. The currently Oscar-nominated animated film. There we go.
Hopefully by the time that this episode comes out, it's Oscar-winning, but...
Hopefully, and I think it definitely deserves it, but I don't think it will win it.
What's it up against, actually?
Boy and the Heron and Spider-Verse 2.
Oh, yeah, that's stiff competition.
That's very stiff competition. And you know, I'm going to grab my copy of Nimona, which was, as it happens, sitting right underneath Riley's book. So, for the folks that aren't familiar with the origins of Nimona, it originated as a webcomic by Nate Stevenson prior even to before his... I almost said seminal, I don't think that's quite the right word, but before his work on the 2018 reboot of She-Ra, which is also phenomenal, and if you enjoyed Nimona, I would suggest you watch that. You can see a lot of similarities between the two. And I think Nimona is probably one of the few instances of the movies actually better. I think those instances are pretty rare, but I think the story got a little bit more time to cook because Nate had not yet realized that he was trans at the writing of Nimona the comic, but had by the second writing of Nimona the movie. For those of you who don't know, the movie was originally... written and basically almost all done, and then Disney acquired Blue Sky and shut them down, I believe, during 2020. I might have the timing wrong, but that is what happened to the movie originally.
Early 2021 is when Disney announced it was shutting down Blue Sky Studios.
I hesitate to say that the movie is better than the webcomic or graphic novel, because I think that they are good in very different ways.
Yes.
I think the subject of the story has shifted to something that might be more personal to people, but I think that the original message was also very powerful.
Yeah, it feels a little bit more polished, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can see how they got to the movie from the book, especially if you know really any details about Nate Stevenson.
I think one of the interesting things about this is sort of, I want to say, like, the Disney Pixar have been, like, underwhelming for many years. It's not, and once again, they missed the trick with this one, because they could have continued the production when they brought Blue Sky. And what did they release last year? Was it the Wish movie?
Yeah, Wish. and this was one of the things that I thought was f-ing hilarious, was all the movies that, like, made it to Oscar nomination were in some way or another, a snub to Disney corporate. And that just warms my heart.
It always does, doesn't it?
Yes.
I mean, like, not to make this a Disney one, you know, because that's not what we're talking about, but Disney had a pretty bad year. Like, critically, a lot of things were better than it. And financially, you know, Illumination was like, hi, Mario movie. But not to be about that, but Nimona, very good. Probably better than the Mario movie. Didn't make as much money because it was on streaming. But yeah. Also, is it still free on YouTube?
It won't be at the time that people are listening to this.
I don't believe at the time of recording it is either. I thought it was only up for that week.
But yeah, it was free on YouTube. It's really good. Probably, you know, worth it to get like that 1 month on Netflix or whatever you need to. And I don't like movies. So me going, yeah, it's good.
It's really good. If you're listening to this episode still and you haven't seen it, I really strongly recommend you go and watch Nimona. It's good. My dad, who fell asleep through about halfway through the Dungeons and Dragons movie, which also phenomenal movie, was actually able to stay awake for all of Nimona. So
it feels very alive, doesn't it? Like talking about like the animation, the way characters move and stuff. You just feel like, okay, there's something always happening. You're always looking at something.
Yes, there's a lot of really cool details. There's one that I was pointed out just before I watched the movie for the first time that was to look at the eyes of the characters, look at their pupils, and just kind of watch that throughout the movie, and you'll see some kind of cool things and some patterns appear.
It's also very fast-paced. Even the moments that seem like they're kind of slower, kind of downtime, have a lot of subtext and background going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on throughout the movie. And I think that's a good thing. Yeah, it's only an hour and 42 long. For as much story as it has, that's... I mean, 100 episodes make it to about an hour, and I don't think we could fit in that many things.
It's very tight. It's like... He's like... 5 minutes, and then here's the but it really is, it's like here's 5 minutes and then we're straight into it. I feel like it's like we set it up and then, oh, here's everything, like the main thing of the movie. Pretty crazy.
The exposition finishes really fast and you're dumped right in and immediately seeing major players of the story showing their qualities in very small ways that are very easy to miss. And also things that make more sense on a second run through to kind of pull things together because, I mean, are we okay with spoilers for this, or is it, like, I don't want to...
Usually what we do with these is we have a... And this, if I had written a script for this episode this time and not been swamped, this would have been in there, as there's a spoiler line where we try and talk about it without spoilers beforehand to kind of give members of our audience who maybe haven't seen it yet a chance to hear us talk about it and maybe potentially convince them to watch it, and then... We allow ourselves to go and rant and rave and lose our pants about the thing in full detail because, one, we would like to do that. That sounds fun. And also, audience members may enjoy that as well.
So, yeah, like, what else can we say about the movie? It's, like, it's really tight, entertaining animation. Like... It doesn't have too many characters, but the characters it does have are very entertaining.
It works very well with a pretty tight cast. And it's trimmed down from the book. There's some characters in the book that I wished we'd gotten, namely the mad scientist lady. I like her.
Of course you do.
Yeah, this is shocker. Maya likes very much the Maya-esque character.
Wild. The movie also has some very powerful, very short lines that I feel like don't happen too much. Like, I feel like a lot of things that might have otherwise been cut out to be sanitized or inoffensive or make sure that nobody could be upset by it. It's not really direct or harmful, but topics of suicide and self-harm and
trans people
pain are very emotionally dealt with and brought up, even if they aren't explored in length, there is a lot of powerful emotion there that you might not be used to seeing.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've seen the movie 4 or 5 times now. And I've cried, like, every time. And it hits me in the feels. A lot of the movie does kind of hit home personally, as I'm going to guess most of the audience is familiar with. I'm trans. If you didn't know that, congratulations on being one of today's lucky 10,000. There was a lot that is very... I don't want to say heavy-handed, because it's not heavy-handed, but it is very explicitly a trans experience of... Isn't it easier to just be normal? Oh.
Easier for who?
Yeah, that one digs out my chest when I watch it. And I watched the movie with my parents, who are older, and when I came out, them definitely had some trouble understanding the whole thing. And I think they definitely got some of my perspective from watching the movie of why things are like that. I guess I kind of indirectly crossed it, but yeah, let's just full on Ghostbusters right about halftime for these episodes. Let's talk in all the gory details about what we love about the film.
We are now crossing the spoiler event horizon. Turn back now if you have not seen the film and do not wish to be spoiled on it.
I'm just imagining the astronaut Interstellar dipping below the point of no return in the black hole. I'm going to see some extra dimensional stuff about now. But yeah, a lot of the facial expressions and voice inflections go pretty hard. And there's a point, I don't remember it word for word, but Nimona pretty explicitly agonizes over how all the kids are told to stick a sword in everything different. Like, they're supposed to haunt monsters. Monsters are bad. And Nimona is, to them, a monster, and she doesn't know if it's worse to see kids taught that hate, or whether sometimes they just want to let them kill him. And I'm still not sure whether to use she, her, or they, them for Nimona. I think
it's Nimona.
They seem like an all pronouns.
Yeah, Nimona is, well, Nimona.
Indeed. One of the funny lines in that respect is one time Nimona takes the shape of a small boy, and Ballister is just like, and you're a boy now? And Nimona says, I am today. Backs sinisterly out of frame, or mischievously out of
the
frame.
The child is deeply funny. It's... I don't know. I love the whole bit with the child.
Another kind of, like you were talking earlier about the subtleties in the eyes. It's really on my first watch, I didn't really catch it, but when there's this confrontation between Golden Loin and Ballister at the top of the Institute, they have this moment where Golden Loin is looking at Nimona and saying, who is she? And then a light passes over the frame and Nimona's eyes glow like a cat's, like the reflected light from the inside. And it just startles him and he says, what is she? And I thought that was a really cool detail that I would have had a hard time catching on my first run. But that's one of those details that's kind of stuck in the eyes, that there's a lot to be seen about what makes each of the characters special, communicated in those really tiny moments.
And also, well, the film has, like, a no surprises about the message, but it's done very well.
Yeah.
And it is a very important message, I feel like, has to be said in this current day environment, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I really can only imagine, like, if we'd actually gotten the film on its original release date, and of course presuming that Disney hadn't gone in with a sanitization toothbrush.
Disneyed all over it.
Like, that would have had impact, you know?
Hmm. Instead, it was kind of stealth-dropped on Netflix, and the only people who know about it are people who are, you know, already in that sort of space or whatever.
I mean, I think it broke containment pretty quickly.
I think it's more like it didn't reach as far as it could have, but it reached quite well.
Yeah, I mean, it made it to the Oscars, which is no mean feat.
Yeah, it's like really good. Very, very emotional. You probably will cry near the ending. No surprise. But once again, we're coming off our previous episode here. And I just think it shows how to write that, you know, like this sort of conservative idea of, you know, being reductive or being, or that, you know, this is fine. This is what we got right now is fine. It's like, no, we need to move forward. We need to be progressive. We need new ideas. Look at things a bit differently and think about things differently. Get rid of preconceived notions. Just because people are older or something is older doesn't mean it is correct.
Yeah, I mean, I think the film definitely does a good job of touching on bias and preconceived notions and kind of the invisible things that you walk into any experience already carrying.
Like, just speaking from my own personal view, it's like when you see, like, you know, like you're on some sort of internet thing and you see, like, oh, I'm a conservative, and I'll post this Bible thing that proves my point. And you'll have someone go, hey, here's a Bible thing that says the opposite or is interpreted in a different way. And I'm like, my answer to that is, who the f*** cares about the Bible? You know? It's like, no, let's ignore all of that and let's talk about this in real terms. And I think that's actually what Nimona does well, is who cares about, like, all this stuff that is written and all that? Let's just look at it in real terms.
It does challenge the standing on principle and tradition ideas. And one of the first things in the movie is the queen saying, from now on, anyone can become a knight if they want to. It's not just a matter of how you're born. And the director of the Institute hated that so much that she killed the queen and framed someone else for it and did this whole thing. And she thought she was justified as preserving tradition and pursuing what a long dead, not so great individual felt.
Yeah, it's like when you hear those crazy stories about how, like, you know, like some Japanese generals were like, oh, no, emperor, we're not going to let you surrender. It's like, what? It's those, you know, sort of those staunch people who can't accept change and actively fight against it. It's like, you know, it's like, geez, you have some, like, change phobia here. You can't, like, have anything be different, can you?
I mean, that's
that's kind of what it all boils down to.
Yeah, it's the political OCD.
Oh, that's so good. I have some time off now for spring break as of time of recording. Obviously, by the time this airs, it'll be over. I'm thinking, I think I need to watch Nimona. It's been like a month. I need to watch it again.
Gotta scratch the itch.
It's so good. The scene where she's marching on the plaza, I think, is like, it's so well done. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal scene in terms of just like showing the point of the movie. And that, and because this is shown in several other scenes throughout the movie, but I want to talk about this one because it's the most obvious. Because it's a standard fare kaiju attack city scene. But Nimona's moving. She's not moving with necessarily much care about the city and the things there. The only things she attacks are basically those which directly attack her. The ad that, the billboard that, like, displays, you know, the ad of children slaying monsters and the glorification of that is the only thing that does not physically harm her that she intentionally damages. She damages a lot of stuff, yeah, but because she's being shot at, because there are drones attempting to shoot her and she's trying to not get hit, or she'll slap the drones, or she slaps, like, Todd away from her. All the damage, really, is done by the knights themselves. Right? Either they miss her, or they do something else, they collide with each other. In their own attempts to lash out and keep themselves safe from what they perceive as dangerous and other, they only end up, well, they really all they end up accomplishing is just hurting themselves, which is I think that's a really great metaphor for just the way that all the transphobic shit going on is going to handle. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's like, it can be used as like a great metaphor. Like, you see in various scenes where, oh, we're going to try and attack Nimona. Oh, we've just ended up hurting ourselves. Oh, that means we should get more angry at Nimona. It's like, it's the same principle if you look at how politics attacks people and people attack the trans people. In the end, all you're doing is making restrictions that actually hurt yourselves. Like, it's just a means of control. Like, now you get cisgendered people who are attacked for apparently being trans when they're not. And that's kind of why we have to fight against it as well, is this does not only, this affects fucking everyone, dudes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to get too political.
Get political. Do it.
I'm getting into the details at that point, but these things, the laws that Florida and then the other Republican-controlled states here in the U.S. are passing or attempting to pass, they're not... Look, even if you hate trans people, the problem is, these laws aren't just going to target me. They're going to target other people who never did any of the things you think I've done. Folks who are, by any and all measure, innocent. I would argue that I also am, but, well, if you hate me, not really much I can do to convince you, probably.
Yeah, and it goes into that sort of thing that we see in the film of how I don't care who gets caught in the crossfire, I just want to take out the thing that scares me.
Yeah, the advisor, she literally does not care how many civilians firing the artillery along the wall would kill. She just wants to kill Nimona.
Which, you know, once again, allegorically, it's like, uh-huh. Yeah. This is so accurate.
Yeah, I think the wording for that was something or close to Golden Loin sees the cannon being turned into the city, and he tells her over whatever radio communications they have that she is going to destroy half the city, and her response is just, but the monster will be destroyed too. And that is something we definitely see these days with these kind of sweeping attacks, especially when and the example of laws being made, sometimes the strategy used is because they know that they can't make a law just saying what they mean. They do intentionally make a broader attack to try and cover what they're actually trying to stop in addition to everything else. And sometimes the laws that happen are completely bonkers because, like, I think Oklahoma had a law go up for vote saying that if a student claims to be a cat or has any, like, fursona stuff going on, that animal control has to be called for them. Like, what in the... Why? Who came up with this?
It's Republicans who have too much time. Get a fucking hobby, you idiot.
Or better yet, get a job.
Get a job. Stop being a career politician. Just grifting off the right wing.
And so because of that, they're, like, trying to make a rule for against people who wear fursuits, and they're also going to open themselves up to, like, hey, the school mascot is dressed up like an animal. Someone call animal control.
I wish I was more moral and just could be a right-wing grifter. It's so f***ing easy. Those pricks. So easy. But unfortunately, I am too good of person not to toot my own horn. But anyway, Nimona's great.
Understatement of the century.
Go watch Nimona. Do it now.
I do want to make a little sidebar here. Less heavy than the stuff we've been talking about. The aesthetic of it. I like science fantasy, but like the science fantasy with the medieval knight aesthetic is, I don't think that's something you see very often.
No, I mean, I believe you've called it monk core to me before.
I think that's what was brought up. Because in the art and original drawings by Nate, it was monk punk is the description that came up a lot. Because Nimona is kind of dressed like a monk, but has chainmail and a tunic. And it's kind of absurd. Even in the comic book, there's the sense of a medieval style society to some extent, but also higher tech, because the novel, I think, focuses mostly on pollution and environmental concerns, because in the novel, Ballister is a self-professed villain, but he's not trying to hurt people. He's trying to bring down a corporation that is polluting everything and making people sick.
Yeah, Ballister...
God, that feels relatable.
Yeah, Ballister in the book and Ballister in the movie are very different. Ballister considers himself to be a bad guy in the book, whereas he doesn't really in the movie.
It's also funny that the name changes because it goes from Ballister Blackheart to Ballister Boldheart.
Yes. I think, honestly, they probably should have kept the name as Blackheart. Because there could have been... I think they could have done some work with that. But they did a lot of work in what little time they had already.
It's also really great with the design and such that I was, like, talking with a partner about it while we were watching it, and Ballister comes into frame. It's like, ah, that's the bad guy. I see the little black goatee. I see the angry eyebrows. the first thing you see him doing is being frustrated about something. That must be the bad guy. He's going to turn out to be evil. And then just moments later, I'm already saying, it's like, no, this is an okay dude. Who is the bad guy? And he's immediately framed for the crime, and I'm left spinning all these theories, trying to assume who was the evil. And I even thought the armor quartermaster guy with the card of swords and stuff might have been evil at some point. The movie explores that as well, but it's interesting how they lean into stereotypes and things that people might assume based on appearance from previous tropes. In a vacuum, I think that you could easily find frames from anywhere in the movie that if you just showed Ballister, you could make him out to be a villain.
Oh, but very easily.
At the same time, throughout the movie, he never feels like that from his mannerisms or the way he treats people. Well, at least not much. He has his moments.
Yeah, it's and that's kind of why I wanted them to keep the Ballister Blackheart, to give that almost additional layer of commentary about preconceived notions and assumptions that we make and invisible baggage we bring into any situation. Of because with a character with the name Ballister Blackheart, the goatee, the vibes, like that setup for this is a villain. This is a villain name. That is colors that are given to villains. And I think that could have been an interesting fourth dimensional, if you would, commentary through the film.
That is there is a thing that you might not see from the first bit without knowing before. But the sword that is given to Ballister, which I think the queen says came from like the back of their armory. If you look closely, it is emblazoned with a G, which probably stood for either Glorith or Golden Loin or something to do with their family, since...
That makes sense, yeah.
Since it's like their lineage, and Golden Loin is like a direct descendant of Glorith. He seems to be the only one, in fact. And the sword has a G on it, and Ballister has made a little scratch in it to turn that G to a B.
That's an incredible detail.
It's really funny. And I think with the sword swap that goes on, I think one of the things that happens is he looks at it for a second and wonders, I was like, doesn't seem right, and it might be the weight, but I think that might be something that the director forgot to add to the imitation sword, the weapon that she was going to use to kill the queen, and that was something that he could kind of...
A detail she overlooked. That's incredible. I never noticed that. I'm gonna have to look at that when I rewatch. Holy shit. That's...
But I thought that was just so cute. He made the sword his by scratching that G into a B for Boldheart.
I'm going through, like, just several layers of whoa, holy shit, that's deep.
I also love the cutesy stuff that goes on, like, in the very first moments of the show, you're seeing Golden Loin and Boldheart holding hands a bit and talking about how they care, or I think they might have even said, why I love you, or something that might have come up. And then they have their own moments where they're talking, both of them independently say, chopping off an arm is not a love language. Things like that are really cute. And it's really cute the whole time. And it's like, if you get to the end of the movie and don't expect them to have a romantic relationship, incredible, you must live under a rock. And it is also, it's refreshing to be at a point where that sort of openness and obviousness can be portrayed in media, where before, not too long ago, as has been mentioned several times in this podcast, we had The Legend of Korra, where you get a hand holding at the end. and maybe leaning in if you really look into it. And that's it. And there's just so, there was so little before, and in comparison to that, Nimona is a veritable bounty of beautiful affection.
It's so good. Go watch it. Like, I know I sound like a broken record here, but oh, it's so worth your time. Even if you're, you know, not certain if you're gonna like it, it's only an hour and 42 minutes long. Go watch it. It's very short. Enjoy.
Something to amuse you, Maya. The story that I'm working on writing right now, the kind of sequel to my first book, I've done a lot of looking around and how copyright stuff works and what's copying and what's referencing and what's allowed. And I'm actually going to have a part of the book where my characters go and watch a stage production of Nimona and talk about it and have that dialogue over it. So that's something for you to look forward to and forget. Ooh. And then be surprised by.
I like how you know me so well. You know I'm going to look forward to it, but you also know I'm going to f***ing forget. And then it's going to just catch me like an 18-wheeler to the sides.
It's almost like you're ADHD and autistic. Almost. You know, suspiciously.
Suspiciously. Yes, yes.
Alrighty.
So, Ian, you were just asked this question not very long ago. But do we have anything in the mailbag?
We have not received any additional mail in the hour or so since I was last asked this question. But I realize that this episode will be coming out a day later than the last one that we just recorded. So, if any of you want to send us a message commenting further on Nimona, our email address is fanfictapes@gmail.com. You can also reach out to us on social media. Currently, we have a presence on Twitter. Maya is in charge of that account.
Yes.
Twitter, formerly known as X.
As at fanfictiontapes, capital F, capital T, no space. I run that thing. Sometimes I post when I'm not traveling an obscene amount. That's why we did a double header on recording today here.
Mm-hmm.
And right now I haven't expanded that to any other social media platforms, primarily because that's a lot of effort and spoons.
We should probably consider that.
I need to do it before, because we still haven't put up the conversation for later.
Yes. You can also leave us a comment on our YouTube channel, and you can also leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever else you listen to this. We always appreciate that. Before we go, Riley, do you have anything that you want to promote?
Yeah, I mean, my website is www.rileyquinnthefool.com. You can see about my book, a couple other people coincidentally named Riley Quinn publishing other works, and also find contact details and a link to Rickroll yourself if you so desire. Anyone who reaches out to me through that email, I would be happy to send out a copy of my book, physical or digital, for free. If you hear this and are interested, let me know. No time limit on that offer. And I hope to have a sample and maybe even a published second book before too terribly long.
Most excellent. Egg.
Get to it.
Right. Anyways, I am and have been Maya. Pronouns she, her. And today I was joined by...
I am and always will be Dylan.
I am for now Riley.
And I am Ian. Until next time, bye!